I was thinking when we were singing, and I've been, last week we sang, Lord God has given me the tongue of disciples, which is out of Isaiah 50. And that reminded me this morning when I was praying about my tongue is the pen of a ready writer, which is in Psalm 45. That's how that psalm starts. And I was thinking about our translating from what's in our soul, in our heads, coming out of our mouths, because the Bible, you know, talks about that. So then that made me think about Jesus sitting around with the disciples, like having dinner. Can you imagine them together? Somebody said the other day, I don't think they all sat on one side of the table. I thought that was real insightful, because I don't think that they did. And you try to imagine a group of 13, you know, being together, because Judas was there for that. And I wonder what they did, you know, when they were together, and what that looked like. I mean, did Peter stand up and go, okay, well, and they all just kind of stood up together and started singing a worship song or whatever. And I assume that it was pretty personal. It was pretty intimate. They were probably having intimate conversations with each other. Although, before they left for the Mount of Olives, they sang a hymn together. And so I try to imagine, you know, what that looked like, because it probably wasn't in English, I'm guessing. And just what that would have been like to listen to the Son of God with his 12 disciples, one of them being the devil's child, singing a hymn together before they left for the Mount of Olives. So that's why this Psalm 45 that I read this morning struck me, and I liked it in the Message. I always try to study with the New American Standard, and then I like the word pictures in the Message. The Message is a translation, but he's a teacher, so, or he was a teacher, and so he spent a lot of time looking at the imagery. And I just love this. My heart bursts its banks, spilling beauty and goodness. I pour it out in a poem to the king, shaping the river into words. And, you know, that fits so well for my heart, because that's what Selah means, as I've studied that word. It means to cast it up to the highway of God. And the highway is like the river. It's like the river of praise. So cast it up to the highway of God. And I think that's really what worship is. And I want to talk a little bit about that today, kind of with that sentiment that's in those word pictures there in the Message. A few things for the week. We're bumping into Ecclesiastes and Psalms and songs now. We've done the Psalms. You get a podcast tomorrow about finding hope. So those are kind of the two subjects I'd like to think about as the week unfolds. And then obviously the man of God get together too. We've been talking about where we've come, what we've learned, what the future holds. We talked about the realities of discipleship. We're going to be bumping down more into this a little bit over the next year. As we celebrate our 40th year, you know, we've learned a lot of things about being disciples and being disciple makers or mentors or whatever you want to call it. So we're going to go a little bit deeper into that. So I've tried to lay a good foundation for that. And I think there's still some sheets back there. They say discipleship at the top, and they talk about the different aspects of discipleship. I was thinking also this morning, as I was watching our worship presenters and our worship team, and I was thinking about how much gifts, our personal spiritual gifts, have to do with casting up praise to the highway of God. And I basically, when I realized I was a teacher, and as I've started to embrace that part of my giftedness, that's a lot of how I get to throw things up to that highway of praise. I get to use my gifts and do that. So sometimes I'm throwing it that way, sometimes I'm throwing it your way, sometimes I'm using it reciprocally with somebody who's sitting across from me at a coffee shop or whatever. But, you know, the giftedness that you have, that God has placed within you, all has a lot to do with how you mentor other people. And, you know, everybody's a mentor, right? We're either like good mentors or bad mentors or somewhere in between all of that. And so giving that some intentional thought, because that's where the kingdom really grows, is because we have this opportunity in life. I don't know how many people that I would say that I've mentored, you know, certainly not thousands, maybe hundreds. And when I look at the different people that I've had that opportunity with, sometimes it's worked out great, sometimes it hasn't worked out so great, you know. But that doesn't really matter. The reality is that we are supposed to be taking the word of being a disciple, go and make disciples of all the nations, teaching them to observe everything I've commanded you, and lo, I am with you always, even to the end of the age. So we're going to investigate that a little bit more. Part of that, where we've settled in on that, and I, if you had an opportunity to look at the post this week, I know Magwag, I just couldn't think of anything else to do, so you're just going to have to live with that, right? I'm thinking about writing a song, though, with Magwag in it, which should be a catchy little ditty. So, but, you know, one of the things that we've learned is about being men of God and women of God, but it dawned on me like about 3 months ago, I thought, why do we even have a woman of God conversation and a man of God conversation? Because, you know, it's like we are all equally disciples before God. You know, think about the energy that goes into try to reestablish the equality of men and women in our culture, at least in my life over the last, you know, 40 or 50 years. But God already sees us in the fullness and the richness of who he's made each one of us to be. And a man of God is every bit as useful to God as a woman of God is useful to God. And that doesn't necessarily mean that you have to be married to experience the fullness of what that means. Man of God, woman of God. And so we're going to be investigating that a little bit more, because that's something I've learned a lot about since I began to walk with Christ. I've always been very sincere. I've not always been very mature. And I kind of can look at my life and, you know, I look at those first 10 years and I think, I had no business being an elder when we started our fellowship, because I, first of all, hadn't raised children, which is a huge deal. Until you hit the teenage years, I mean, I'm not sure you really know that much about discipleship and about life in that way. And I think that's why it says that an elder is supposed to be a certain kind of person, and having children who believe. That is part of the way that it's explained. So whether you're sitting here and you're 15 years old, or whether you're sitting here and you're 75 years old, when you are a man of God or a woman of God, you have great value to God. As you look at your life as a man of God or a woman of God, and how are you seeing the kingdom built in your life? So that's what we're talking about. And I'll tell you, you know, the world's always been a mess. So I'm not under any delusion about that at all. But we are in a culture, and in our world culture, we're swinging. You know, a pendulum is swinging, and you can feel it going. And it's going to be interesting to see what the life of a believer looks like over the next 10 or 15 or 20 years. I pray for this for my kids, and particularly for my grandkids, because I can feel that swing. Now, will it come back? I don't know. That's kind of up to God. But where it's going right now can be kind of a fearful thing. So I'd just like to invite you to pray about that. I don't so much really care that every guy from our fellowship comes. We've been doing these for years. I am concerned that God has the right group of men there. And so if you are a man and you are pursuing being a man of God, and you know somebody else who is pursuing that as well, bring them along. We're going to tell some stories. We're going to look at some scriptures. On Saturday, we're going to talk about the onslaught that we're experiencing, not just with men, but also with women in our culture. But this week, it's for men only. So there you go. Worship. We looked last week at Ephesians, where it talks about, you know, what it looked like when they gathered together. You know, one of them brought a psalm, one of them brought a hymn, whatever. So we're going to pick up on that a little bit. But I've been meditating on that because, you know, I'm realizing that not everybody feels the same way about being in the big room that I do, okay? I really like getting together with other people to sing. One of my greatest experiences in life was being out at Boulder and singing with the men who were at Promise Keepers, and there were thousands of us, and the mountains were there, and we were singing. They weren't even songs that I liked, but we were singing them, and it was so incredibly moving to hear voices singing without a worship band, just singing and hearing it bounce back off from the mountains. I don't think I'll ever, I get shivers up my spine right now thinking about what that was like. So that was probably my biggest large group experience together. But I also have those experiences when I'm all alone, when I'm all alone with God. I came over here this morning to open up a building, and I walked out, and the sun was just starting to come up, and I looked out at this valley over here, and this is like just a beautiful valley. It's going to be kind of a shame to see it all be houses, but they're starting to pop up, you know, out there. You can kind of see them in the distance, and there was this mist that was over the whole valley, but it was like a really thick mist that was hanging through it, and then the sun was coming up, so you could kind of see the golds and the oranges, and they're starting to pop out. And I walked back over to the yard, and I thought, there's an owl hooting in my yard. And I thought, so not only is this a visual experience, this is also an audible experience. And sure enough, I look up at the poplar tree right behind my house as I'm walking up to the house. And there he is, and he turns his head toward me and follows me as I went into the house. But, you know, worship is just supposed to permeate every part of our lives, and it can if we recognize it and invite God into all the different parts of our life. So it's really an invitation into the presence of God, and you know, that's really what the Bible is. The Bible is an invitation into the presence of God, because we are in the presence of God, but we are at odds with God. And so to be brought into the presence of God is God extending that to us and inviting us to be in God's presence. And that happens when we're alone. I've also seen that it happens when we're together. We were a group of 8 or 9 people the other night, and we were talking about, you know, whether we wanted to sing songs together or not. And we were experimenting with a couple songs that I brought along. But we told great stories together about what God was doing in our lives together. And so that can look a lot of different ways. We used to call it house churches, you know. But even that turned into something that, you know, a house church. And then I got a house church, you know. So when we're together, when we're gathered together with friends, you know, there's something special about experiencing each other's stories, bearing one another's burdens, celebrating each other's exciting events in life. And then there's the when we're gathered together, like, you know, I enjoy this, and I appreciate the fact that you guys are willing to listen to me week after week. Enjoy it while it's here. You know, sooner or later it'll be gone. And I enjoy gathering together. I like singing. I like knowing the hearts of the people who are putting our music together. And I like watching Joe Derby being an uncle over in the front row, you know, with the kids from their family. And I mean, it's just it's a beautiful thing to gather together and be aware of each other and aware of what's going on in each other's life. And that spills over then in, like the passage was talking about, it spills over, because then when we go out into the world, we're carrying something into the world. And that's what I want to talk a little bit about today out of Colossians. We looked at Ephesians 5 last week, and there's a parallel passage in Colossians 3. And before we get to Colossians 3, I'd like you to turn over to 1 Corinthians 12, because I've been thinking about this, the one another part of it. You know, we'll probably debate the group part of it, you know, until eternity. You know, what should we be doing in our worship time and our big time together? You know, what should be the different elements of it? And that's good. You know, we have people who are debating that every week, and I think we should be thinking about that from a perspective of what's effective and what's responsive to what God is doing in our group. But in chapter 12, the idea is of what is one another worship. And chapter 12, I think, gives a little bit of a key to it. Chapter 12, verse 4. There are varieties of gifts. So this goes back to kind of what I began our conversation with today. There are varieties of gifts, but even though there are lots of gifts and effects of those gifts, we all share the same Spirit. Okay? And you talk about oneness and being on the same page. I mean, the world is never going to experience that. We're going to try to make it happen. Believers have trouble enough making that happen with that one Spirit that is bringing us together. Varieties of gifts, but the same Spirit. There are varieties of ministries and the same Lord. There are varieties of effects, but the same God who works all things in all persons. But to each one is given the manifestation for the common good. Okay, so let me tell you how I look at it when I come each Sunday, Sunday after Sunday, year after year, 40th year. I haven't missed a lot of Sundays. And what I've learned to do is I've learned to, as I gather together with God's people, I have learned to look for this connection that's being described right here. When you and I have coffee together and we share the same Spirit, you have something to offer me, I have something to offer you. And it's really a cool thing. But never forgetting that we share the same Spirit, that's what's neat about being able to talk to somebody who's from a foreign country and can barely even speak English, but if you are talking about this right here, about who God is, you can connect with people from anywhere around the world because we share the same Spirit, even though we might not share the same culture or the same language. And I think one another worship, if you really want to be involved with one another worship, and that's what I ask myself a question every Sunday when I get together is, it's not what am I going to get and how am I going to feel, you know, when we sing together or when we see people or when I watch things happen between people. I'm thinking about, what is it that I have to offer today? How am I gifted? And maybe more importantly, am I going to be available to God when he asks me to offer it? That's how I feel about teaching. I mean, I don't know how you've ever done any public speaking at all, but learning how to public speak, that's one thing. Learning how to let God speak through you is totally another thing. That took me years to figure out how to do that. And it meant that God needed to own my heart. If he owns my heart, then I don't really worry that much about what comes out of my mouth, although I'm sure sometimes you think I should worry about it, but I don't worry because if God owns my heart, then it really doesn't matter necessarily what that looks like when it comes out of my mouth. And that's what giftedness is all about. That's about God owning your heart. And I wouldn't even begin to, I have indicators, but you have this very unique recipe. Some of your recipes I know better than others. You have a recipe of how God has gifted you and put that gifting inside of you by that same Spirit. And what I'm looking for is to be able to see that and connect with that. And if worship in the big room does it, if worship in looking at the word here does it, if worship in one of the classrooms with teachers taking time with their kids, if worship happens as people are coming in the car and what they're experiencing as a family, all of that weaves together to make one another worship. Now, I want to talk a little bit about the things that build up one another. So we're going to kind of end with that. But I want to look at this passage in Colossians 3 because it's a little different than the Ephesians passage. And there are some really keys in here because if you're committed to being a worshiper and if you're committed to that worship, not just being here, not just being in here, but if you're committed to experiencing what is described in some of the passages that we're looking at, I think Colossians chapter 3 can be helpful to you. So, chapter 3, verse 1. And there's a progression here. So by the time we get to let the word of Christ richly dwell within you, teaching and admonishing one another down in verse 16 with psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, which we talked about a little bit last week, there's a whole context that this is in. And here's the first part of it. I've kind of outlined it for you. The first four verses. Therefore, if you've been raised up with Christ, okay, so answer that question, have you been raised up with Christ? The answer to me is yes, I have been raised up with Christ. That's why I know I'm alive. My heart has been resurrected. Therefore, if you've been raised up with Christ, keep after seeking the things that are above. Not the things that are here, but the things that are above. Where Christ is, seated at the right hand of God. Now think about that. Think about how radical this is, what he's trying to explain to us. Here we live in a temporal world where we are so tied in to everything about this temporal world. And he's saying, please, please, if you've been raised up with Christ, keep seeking the things above where Christ is, where he is seated at the right hand of God. So go after those things. And not only go after those things, verse 2, set your mind on the things that are above. Now, sounds easy, right? But you know how difficult this is. You know how much energy draws away your mind from the things above. And yet, God is really clear. Paul is really clear. This is where he wants us to live if we've been raised up with Christ. Why? Verse 3, you have died and your life is hidden with Christ in God. Where is Christ? He is at the right hand of God. Where is your soul hidden? It's at the right hand of God. That's where you belong. That's where I belong. And yet, we live in a world that is trying to say, no, you belong here. When Christ, who is our life, is revealed, then you also will be revealed with him in glory. That's like so totally radical. And then to even try to get your hands around or your mind around what that means. And then to be being told by Paul the Apostle that that's where he wants you to live. I don't know about you, but I don't have a lot of data about heaven. I've searched the scriptures. I've read Randy Alcorn's book on heaven. You know, I have pondered heaven. But there is limited information about heaven, particularly when it comes to the practicality of it. And so the first step in having this kind of worship experience that God is describing here is to keep seeking things above. So here's what I think. You know, well, there are 150 of us here right now, about 250 of us meeting there. I think that if half of us came in every time we gathered together with the mindset that we're seeking things above, or if one of the two of us that rub shoulders with each other, whether we're having coffee or bumping into each other, if one of the two of us has our mind set on things above, what's that going to do? What's that going to do for our worship together and our corporate worship together and our life of giving our bodies as a reasonable service of worship? So that's the first thing, seeking the things above. Verse 5. I know you're thinking this is amazing. He's talked about these verses now for years and years and years, but just can you tell how much more I'm learning? Yeah, I'm understanding more about the depths of what these things mean in my own life, just like you are. Verse 5, okay, you set your mind on things above. Therefore, consider the members of your earthly body dead. They're dead. You've died and been raised in Christ. Dead to what? Dead to immorality. Well, do you feel immorality? Yeah, I don't feel very dead when it comes to issues of immorality or impurity or passion or evil desire and greed, which amounts to idolatry. Do I feel dead to those things? No, I feel very much alive to those things. So he's explaining something to me that is hard for me to understand. So when he says, consider the members of your body as dead to those things, I'm obviously going to have to shift gears from the way I normally live or used to live without any kind of boundaries related to those things. For it is because of these things that the wrath of God will come upon the sons of disobedience. And in them, don't forget, you once also walked when you were living in them. But now you also put them all aside. Anger, wrath, malice, slander, abusive speech. Those are the things that maybe you can identify a little bit more with than that nasty list, that nasty human list. These are more the emotional, relational list right here. Anger, wrath, malice, slander, abusive speech from your mouth. Do not lie to one another. Since you laid aside the old self with its evil practices, and having put on this new self, who is being renewed to the true knowledge according to the image of the one who created him, a renewal in which there is no distinction between Greek and Jew, it's everybody. Circumcised and uncircumcised, barbarian, Scythian, slave, and freeman, it doesn't matter what your background is, but Christ is all, and Christ is in all. And that forms the basis for unity. That forms the basis for worship. That forms the basis for the kinds of oneness that the Bible is describing. So keep seeking the things above. Also, live a life that's dead to sin. And, you know, I think by and large, you guys do a pretty good job of that. It's not that we're not battling with sin, right? But as far as being dead to sin, you know, I feel like I'm like 90% dead to sin. 92.4%, I don't know, it depends on the week. And which, by the way, the first list was easier to define. The second list in there is the one I struggle with. You know, so just a word. Then he draws us from that as far as seeking the things above and live a life dead to sin. Verse 12. So as those who have been chosen of God. So he goes back to that, you know, who are you? What's your identity? Because I'll guarantee you that almost all of our issues related to sin happen because of identity issues. We're not happy with who we are. There's somebody else we'd rather be. And there's something somewhere else we'd rather, whatever. I mean, there are all these different things. It says, those who have been chosen of God, your identity, holy and beloved, pure to God and beloved, put on a heart of compassion, which is the opposite of the things that we've just been looking at in those two lists. Put on a heart of compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. I mean, when a group of people, when two people or four people or six people or 12 people or 200 people get together and they have a heart of compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience, what does that look like? Well, we experience some of that here. We experience part of that as we gather together. But he's not done. Bearing with one another. Right, the first list is the easy part, right? Bearing with one another and forgiving each other. Whoever has a complaint against anyone, just as the Lord forgave you, so also should you. So I think that's describing, you know, you've heard me talk about a pure heart, know God, do kindness, and grow life. I think that's describing a pure heart relationship with other people. That's the list right there. Put on a heart of compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, patience, bearing with one another. Why do I have to put it on? Because it doesn't come naturally to me. It has to come from God. That's why I'm putting it on. Almost like I'm clothing myself in it is kind of the image of the words that are there. And beyond all things, so live a pure heart experience, seek the things that are above, living a life dead to sin. Now he's going to describe what this putting on love looks like in our relationships. So verse 14. Beyond all these things, put on love, which is the perfect bond of unity. Check that out. Bond. What do you think about when you think about a bond? It's something that ties you together. A bond of unity is something that makes you walk beside somebody, not just because you're beside each other and you're on the same road. It's because you are sharing a bond of unity because of who you are and what your identity is. Beyond all these things, put on love, which is the perfect bond of unity. And now, let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts, to which indeed you were called in one body, and be thankful. So if there's anything that you want to make sure about whenever you go out into the world or you're gathering together with other believers, you want to make sure that this is what's happening inside of you. It's the one thing you have control over. You don't have control over anybody else, but you can impact this. Let the word of Christ richly dwell inside of you. How does that happen unless you search the word of Christ? How does that happen unless you are a person of the word? How does that happen if you sit there and you think, well, I know it, I've heard it all, I've experienced it all on some level, but you're not continuing to experience day by day what the word of God brings to you and brings to us together? Let the word of Christ richly dwell inside of you. Here, not above, here, let it richly dwell inside of you here, with all wisdom, teaching and admonishing one another. It's kind of like has a little bit of a corrective aspect to it, but not like, hey, you know, Dean, you better figure this out. You know, that's more of a rebuke. You know, what admonishing is it's kind of like being around each other. And as we talk about the word of Christ being alive in us, do you ever feel admonished by somebody else? I've been admonished like 4 or 5 times since I've been here today by watching people interact with other people. It's been admonishing to me. It reminds me that I only have my recipe. I don't have your recipe. I need you because you have the same spirit, but you have different effects and different gifts. Let the word of Christ richly dwell within you with all wisdom, teaching and admonishing one another. Cool. How? With psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing with thankfulness in your hearts to God. And whatever you do in word or deed, do it all in the name of Lord Jesus, giving thanks through him to God the Father. So, I think that this is all about the heart, and it's very kind of little about actions. This is an interesting idea, and in fact, I want to bounce over to the passage in Ephesians. It talks about making melody in your hearts. I don't know why Paul didn't talk about it here, because the passages are almost identical when he gets to that part, but he talks about making melody in your heart. And as I look at this passage, I can't help but think, you know, what is my psalm? You know, what is my spiritual song? What is my hymn? And rather than going to sing hymns and to sing spiritual songs, okay, maybe I should bring those with me. Maybe they're way more portable than I give them credit for. And that's what really struck me as I was thinking about this the last couple of weeks. How incumbent it is upon me to make sure that my heart is making melody to God. And you know how hard that is. It's hard for all of us. There are all kinds of things that are singing the opposite song. But I think that's what makes community the way this is described. Rulership, the rich spirit word, and thankfully engaging one another and being prepared to sing melodies together. And I think that's one of the tough things, even about being with a group of a couple hundred people. You know, I get to say hello to lots of people, but I don't get to have conversations with very many people. There are limitations. When you get together with a group of 8 people, that's not so hard. When you get together with a group of 1 other person or 2 other people, that's not hard at all. You know, eyeball to eyeball, face to face, you can talk about the melody or lack of the same that your friend or your mentoree is experiencing. So that leads me to the question, what are the things which build up one another? Because all different environments have their limitations. I won't embarrass him right now, but I was talking to somebody this week who was watching a game at the bar in a Hy-Vee. I know he doesn't drink, so I guess it wouldn't be embarrassing to him at all, but he was sitting and somebody was sitting next to him, and they struck up a conversation, and they were talking about God together. And I was thinking, when he was telling that story to the little group that we were together the other night, I thought, that's it. That's the song, you know? He's there watching part of, I assume, the Hawkeye game. I don't know. He's watching part of a game, and he's sitting there, and he's alone, and his heart is open, not just to watching football, but to somebody sitting right next to him. So he extends himself to the person right next to him. And so you ask the question, what are the things that build up one another? I love that story because it sounded like it was more like the teaching them to observe, go and make disciples, go out to the Hy-Vee Market Grill, you know. What are the things which build up each other? Well, heart greetings. You can be assured that by and large, if I just look at you when I see you and go, hi, it's really more than kind of making the rounds, like, oh, I'm going to try to say hi to everybody when it's our one chance to be together during the week. You can be pretty sure that my brain is processing what I'm seeing in the look in your face, and I'm availing myself to whatever it is that God is trying to tell me when I'm having that conversation. Because heart greetings are so incredibly important. When we embrace one another, and how can you have a true heart greeting with 10 people, you know, in an hour and a half period of time? It's difficult, right? Although I'm really surprised that when God meets with you and you open up that part of your life to God, how much God can get out of a greeting, how much God can get out of 15 seconds, how much God can get out of a minute. Showing personal care and concern, you know, you greet somebody, and I'm not just talking about in this group, you greet somebody and, you know, they just have that look on their face like, my life was crap this week. Okay, so I can just go, well, okay. It doesn't mean I have to talk to somebody, but if I see the crap look, then what I do is I'll pray right then. I won't say, well, I'm going to put them on my prayer list. I'm going to go, whatever is happening in that person's life right now that's giving them the crap look on their face, I pray, God, that you would reveal yourself and deliver them from that. And that's all part of heart greetings. But again, it's all a matter of having your heart available, you know, to God as you greet other people. I'm not even going to talk about the holy kiss part of things because that gets really complicated. It's actually a kiss of love, but I think it's the greeting of love here. Personal care and concern. The validation of our gifting. I like nothing better than being able to look at somebody and say, you know, that's one of the things that I like about you. Because whenever I see that happen in you, that tells me about the essence of how you're gifted and who you are. And I love it when I hear that from other people. And I love it when I am able to tell that to people when I see it. So validation of our gifting. And then right along with that, the shared stories of God showing up. What's more fun? What's more fulfilling? What's more enriching than to get together with an old friend or a couple of friends or a group of people and talk about how God showed up? And it doesn't mean that everybody in the group or it has to have a story, a great story. But it's so edifying when you hear about how God showed up. Anyway, some things to think about. I mean, it's a kind of a really, a well-used passage, concept, idea. I'm still learning about it. I'm still trying to understand. what Paul was talking about when he was saying it. You know, what he was trying to get across when he was saying it. So, there you go.